3, 2, and 1. All right, there will be bourbon tonight, today. I don't know what. I guess it's this afternoon. We got John Madden, former professional baseball player. But what really brings him to notoriety is that former teammate of mine in high
yes,
school.
Sir.
JPC, all those good things.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Okay. So John Madden, he'll be talking tonight a little bit about his path, what led him from high school to college to where if you go on his website and read about him and then getting drafted by the Padres in the 8th round, then becoming you were a Rule 5 pick with the Mets, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. We'll have to because most people are like, what is a Rule 5 pick? So
yeah, I'm not even sure I know fully.
Okay.
But I'll try
well, that maybe we won't ask you, but we'll ask you anyway. And then just kind of get into what it is you do, because I know you have the you go pro baseball, and there's a lot of questions I've got from people who, once I told them I was going to talk to someone like yourself, they've got kids, they got to want to, you know, pick your brain on some stuff from a training aspect to like the diet aspect, the mental aspect and all, but also just to kind of give you a chance to, man, let's catch up, number one, and then just figure out how this path of yours went, man. That's pretty cool. So welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Good to talk to you. It's been a minute.
A little bit.
Appreciate you. Yeah, how long has it been? So you graduated what? 2000?
I was 99.
99, okay, and I was 01.
You were 01, and then
We played together 2 years at Poinciana High School.
Yeah,
in the hood.
In the hood. I wonder how it is these days. I've driven by it once about 10 years ago. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. This is my son, KJ. Also, his real name's John. So he's not a junior, but he's John Madden.
Wait, does he know
Brandon? He doesn't know Brandon Guyer, but he is from D.C., and Brandon Guyer is up in D.C. We just took a trip up there, and that's we got talking again, I think, right? You were like, you're in my neighborhood. And I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. I lived in Pentagon City in Arlington, right across from the Pentagon where I was working. And now I moved down to Stafford. So about 45 minutes south of DC. Could be 2 hours, depends on the traffic, as you probably experienced while you were up there.
Yeah. We were just north, I think, Bethesda.
Yeah, area of Maryland. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you get to go to an Orioles game or they weren't playing yet?
We didn't, man. We had a quick trip. Actually, my wife was supposed to come with us, and then she ended up getting sick. And we were going to stay out there all week because it was this spring break. But she got sick, so then me and him just hit it in and out, man. We were in one day and out the next. So
it's great.
We checked out DC and did all that.
Quick video is
it's a cool spot if you get back up because I mean, like you growing up in Florida, we have the Rays, right? Like that's not a stadium. It still isn't. Right. But, when I moved up here, I got to go to Nationals games. I drove up to the Yankees last year because I'm a Giants fan, obviously. What's up? So every game the Giants were at, I went to one of their stadiums. Right. So I went to the Yankees,
went
to the Pirates, got to go see Pac Bell, what the hell is the name of that stadium? PNC Park. What beautiful stadium. Nationals, obviously, where they swept the Giants. That was fun. All 3 games with my daughter, just watching. That was embarrassing. And it was so hot. It was the summer last season. God, the summers out in D.C. are miserable, girl. And then going to Camden Yards, I went for the first time when the Angels were out there, and Shohei Ohtani hit like this 470-foot bomb. Like he gave up 3 home runs. He was pitching that night too, but he still won. It was wild. Like the dude was getting like rocked, but it was one of the rare nights the Angels actually scored. And he hit a home run. I've never seen a ball hit that far in my life, dude. Like, that was and that stadium's so cool, man. Like, you guys got to get up there when you come back.
Yeah, I got to check it out. I wonder if he bet on that. If he bet on hitting the home run.
What do you think about that anyway? Do you think, like, he knows what's going down? Or
man, I think so. I don't know. I haven't really followed it too much, but you got to know, like, the guy – what did he say? The translator
18 million?
took a
18
bunch.
Million? Come
18
million.
Come on, you know if 18 million is missing now. I think he's the fall man. The translator's the fall man.
Yeah, and then they were very conveniently saying like, oh, there was no bets on baseball. There was no bets on baseball.
Right.
Yeah, okay, well, good for him. I guess, man. So, well, before I forget, as I get too far into it, as always, tonight's discussion is fueled by America's Native Spirit. This is bourbon, and I got a new release from Buffalo Trace. They don't really put too many different or new products out. They kind of stick to the classics, right? So we got a new one. It's a collaboration. It's called Traveler Whiskey with country artist Chris Stapleton and the master distiller at Buffalo Trace, Harlan Wheatley. What's interesting about this is they obviously it's not age stated, and they label it as a blended whiskey. So, and they say it's a blend of multiple different whiskeys. None of them say that they're straight bourbon. They don't even call it bourbon, which is kind of interesting. If you get too down, if you get into the weeds of this stuff, but so that's what I'm going to be pouring tonight. I don't know if John's got anything, but it's solid. It's solid. It's easy to find everywhere. Not so easy in Virginia. We got weird rules. We got state run liquor stores out here, so things are different. But yeah, that's what I'm rolling with tonight.
So my little bartender brought.
Here we go. Going with the blends. What's the green label?
Yeah. So this is, I don't know. So I'm all right. First of all, before we get too far into it, I'm a bourbon guy, but okay. You're going to get mad at me because I drink Jim Beam and Coke is my drink.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, drink what you like. You know, I do Jim Beam, the stag, the cherry one with Pepsi. So, yeah.
Oh, I never tried that. I got to try that. I like cherry.
Put it at the pool. That's how I did get by.
So this is the best bottle of bourbon I have. But it's some kind of special. I don't know. Maybe you would know.
Most of those different versions are they're international ones. I haven't seen the green one. I don't know what's it say.
It says dumped 10/19/2020, barrel 375, warehouse H, rich number 32, non-chill filtered, Blanton single barrel bourbon.
Okay.
2020 special release.
That's cool. Yeah, I need to go back and look that one up and see what the green label signifies. I finally had the Blanton's Gold, like the pizza place around here, which is so random. They have a bar and they have like this amazing bourbon selection. Makes no sense because it's just like your neighborhood pizza.
A regular spot, pizza place. Right?
Yeah. And I walked in there. I was waiting for my pizza. I'm like, what the hell? They got all kinds of stuff. They got Blanton's Golds in there. So that's cool.
Well, I've had one drink of this. And
one. That looks like.
Just one. But every time
the cup, bro.
No, it ain't like that. I really had just one drink of it. And then I just put it out, you know, anytime anyone comes over. Okay. And this is where we're at right now. So people like
no one put that one back.
but I drink the good stuff. I drink the Jim Beam and Coke.
There you go. That's legit. No, that's good. No, so some useless trivia for those at home, real quick, was Blanton's as branded as single barrel. They were the first single barrel product, I think in 1984 or 86 is when Blanton's was introduced. So they were the first ones to do a single barrel. And as you may or may not know, single barrels, they vary, right? Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're just not so good. You know, you'll see stuff that gets, it's the best bourbon of X year. But if you don't get that barrel and that specific bottle, you know, it might suck. And people have ran into that with Henry McKenna, the 10-year from Heaven Hill. Their single barrel from, I think 2019 was the number one whiskey in the world. And then everyone went and found it and it wasn't that bottle. And they're all like, what is this? This isn't even that good. So.
All right. Let me ask you something.
Okay.
So like I said, Jim Beam and Coke, but if I'm out at a place and they don't have it, I always ask for Hazel Baden or what is
Hazel
it?
Hazel Baden. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I could do that. I like that. But what, all right, what do I need as my third drink of choice if I'm out of the place and they don't have either one of those?
Well, I noticed the two things right off the top from Basil Hayden and Jim Beam is both of them are Jim Beam products, obviously, but they're also both 80 proof. So they're very low, right? I like high proof stuff, like anything 100 north, I'm good with. That's my jam. So you're mixing it too, right?
Yeah, I mix it with Coke.
Okay, so you always mix it, then it really doesn't matter.
It don't matter.
I would say, like, honestly, like, if you're a good mixer, like, obviously Buffalo Trace, like, that's fine. It's hard to see. I don't know how it is. Are you still in Florida?
Yeah, Florida. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know if it's readily available there, but something that I think is on every shelf, especially if you're going to mix with Coke, is probably Maker's Mark or Woodford Reserve. Those two.
No, I don't like the Maker's Mark.
Really?
I don't really like it. Yeah. I'm with Coke.
I would tell you to try the Maker's, the French 46. It's one of their like new experimental things. And it's pretty mass produced at this point, but they, instead of using white American oak, which is like how you technically make bourbon by law, white American oak, this is with French oak. So it's a whiskey. It's not really a bourbon, but yeah, that stuff's good. But yeah, I mean, if you're mixing it with Coke, I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. Woodford's pretty good. Cause I like Woodford's very sugary to me. That's why I love it.
I think I'm a sugar guy. Yeah.
It's hard not to be, man. All right, dude, I got a ton for you.
All right, what do you got?
Let's go back to high school, right? So
way back.
Yeah, we're going way back. So obviously I was 99. You were a sophomore playing with us in varsity. And what I remember of you as a sophomore pitcher is, A, you were tall and lanky, and I hated pitching or facing tall pitchers. Like, for some reason, that's just like, it's very intimidating. Like, and I think to this day, like, when I got to college, we had this dude, we called him Unit, because he was a big left-hander, like Randy Johnson, big Unit. He was 6'8", and he's going to be tall.
His mom is 6 foot.
Your mom is 6 foot?
Yeah.
What?
He's way bigger than all the kids right now.
Oh, my God. If you're six, you're 6'4", right?
6'4"? I'm 6'4", yeah.
Okay, so this your son's going to be like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, think the doctor said 6'7", 6'8".
But. Oh yeah, he's gonna be a big kid, man. Yeah, so and that was one of the things I remember, because I just remember when we would, like, the few times that you pitched against us in high school, I just remember, like, man, John is huge, and it hid your fastball. I thought, like, I couldn't see, and that was at a time where you really weren't throwing nearly as hard as what you ended up throwing. Like, you were like what, mid-80s around that time?
Probably. Yeah, probably, yeah. Low mid-80s at that point. Yeah.
But it looks so much harder, and like I don't remember any of our actual at bats other than thinking that you were tall, but I'm pretty sure I didn't do anything, so I'm not going to pretend that I did. But yeah, back to high school, I think what I went back and saw on your website is, obviously, we were a weird team that year. My senior year, you were a sophomore, and you were up there playing with us, and it's like, I don't know, we were constantly underachieving, I thought, but you always pitch pretty well, especially being young. Like, how was that for you, pitching against older people all the time?
Older
competition.
Yeah, it was cool. I always felt like I was a competitor. I thought, you know, and I always felt really strongly about our teams. Like, I think we all did. Like, we were kind of like the underdogs always, and we're kind of scrappy, and nobody, you know, the other schools and teams around us were like, you know, high and mighty and the big dogs and stuff. So we were always trying to bust our butt to kick their ass. So, you know, that was, you know, we were a competitive team, and I really enjoyed it, especially that year. And then, you know, the next few years after that too.
Yeah. And that's what I want to touch on, because the other guy that was from our area, Joe Torres, I remember you mentioned, and the only memory I have of Joe Torres, the only time I remember, I think he pitched against us two or three times, but the only at bat that I remember is that he hit me with a curveball, like, on the inside of my thigh, and I had a bruise for like 3 months. It made no sense. Like, I just remember that was like the only real thing I ever had a takeaway from him. And he was another one. He had a ton of hype, because he was starting to come into his own. He was a junior and he was starting to throw pretty hard, but
yeah.
I think, like, I looked him up once, I think 2 or 3 years ago. I think he's like a pitching coach or some sort of positional coach with the Angels still, like, out in their system.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's doing now. I mean, he was back then, he was 10th overall, I think he was,
yeah,
right?
Like, he got the money and everything.
Yeah, over a million bucks.
But that's what I remember. It's like, so, and this was Gateway High School, and not like anyone knows this for context, but I mean, Gateway High School was what, 10 minutes away from us growing up, right? So it was like, and that was the other weird thing about our area is we didn't play those kids we didn't play those kids in Little League. So I don't know where Joe Torres came from, right? I didn't play against him in Little League. I didn't play against him in Senior League before we got to high school. Never heard of him until it was like, oh, hey, there's this kid, Joe Torres, at, you know, Gateway High School 10 minutes down the road, and he throws like 94. It's like, really? And he's a lefty? That was weird.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know what he's doing now. That's cool if he's still in the game. I remember me and Gus, another one of our teammates, we saw him couple years after high school. He was working at a place with Gus, and he was still in double A or something. I think that's kind of where he ended his playing career. But yeah, he was nasty, man. He was nasty.
What was that like for you though, after? So I'm gone now, like, so this is you guys junior senior year. What was that like for you guys? Because I would assume you were a better team than us. Because
Awesome. That next year we tied for OBC champs, and then my senior year we won OBC champs. So we, we got better every year, and we were still a crappy team. Like, on paper, we were still terrible. Like, I think we had 10 kids, and two of them were in like the ESOL classes, which is not.
You can play baseball, wrong. Bro.
They were bro. They could swing it, man. They were they were great players.
Yeah,
and you know, it was we were definitely we just wanted to win so bad, and we just wanted to beat those other teams because they were so cocky.
Well, so that was the thing, though. Like, so you talk about in that about section on your website, there's a game where you was this when you were a junior or a senior where you were playing. It must have been when you were a junior, when you were playing Gateway, and you said there's all these scouts there to see Joe, and you wanted to kind of show out. But so you were the year behind him, right?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep.
So how did that go? What was that? Because, I mean, I remember, God, there's so many kids that I remember we playing Colonial High School. There was a kid, I don't remember his name, a shortstop. And then I remember Felipe Lopez we played against. Maybe it was him, but he went on to have a pretty good career. He played up in, he was AAA All-Star. He played with the Blue Jays for a while. He actually was their shortstop for several years. But he was probably like, I remember it was either him or it was another kid at Colonial High School when we played, and you had all those scouts there. Like, it's just natural for you, like, because you know they're not there for you, but you're like, hey, maybe.
Right,
maybe,
right.
Maybe I play good and someone notices, right? So
yeah, yeah.
So what was that sure. like?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. You know, Joe was pitching that game, and I was pitching against his team.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the scouts, he had every scout in every major league team out there. And, you know, he's pitching. They've all got the radar guns up and stuff. And then I go out there my first inning, and they all hold the radar gun up. And then the second pitch, only like five of them hold it up. And then the third pitch, none of them are holding the radar gun up.
Oh, this guy sucks.
I'm like, oh, man, it was so discouraging.
That's funny, man. That's wild. So, all right, so I guess my question for you is, because the world changed very, very drastically, right? For not only for just us as Americans, but just me personally. I was up in New York, like I said, playing up there in college when 9/11 happened. You graduated, but prior to 9/11, what was your path? Were you had committed to Auburn? Like, how did you get to that point? Or did you walk on? Like, I don't know what your path was from graduating Poinciana, winning OBC. Had you kind of came up into, like, you were on the radar of college coaches at that point?
Yeah. So I thought so the next time I went against Torres, the scouts were out there again. And this time I was pitching, and I remember they held the radar guns up, and this time they kept going up. They kept going up. Had a great game. So now I'm thinking, I'm getting drafted. I'm about to get $1 million.
Hell yeah.
I just pitched a great game. And someone told me I threw 90 miles an hour that game.
What? So like, damn. Okay.
Like, so I'm like, oh, I am him right now, you know? And, you know, draft comes around, nothing. Didn't get drafted. So I'm like, dang. So I was like, man, I'm just going to go be a truck driver. My dad was a truck driver.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't know.
Big job, truck. Yeah,
big. Yeah, I'm from Poinciana. We don't go to college, you know, playing baseball or whatever. So yeah, that was that. And then I got invited to the high school All-Star game.
Okay.
And I go to the game, and I did good, I guess. And one coach from Seminole Community College, was like, hey, I really like what I saw. I want you to come to our – like a walk-on tryout or whatever before school started. I was like, yeah, all right. And I blew him off. I didn't go. And so he called
and
me.
Seminole, like, for people who don't know, Seminole actually, like, takes they got a good program. Like, they put people into big schools, and they take a lot of good players from the area. And you're like, no, I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I told him, I was like, yeah, I'll be there. And then I never showed up. I never went, you know, just being an idiot with, you know, out any.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Trust me. I know what that was like. I know it.
So anyway, after the tryout, he called me. The coach called me, and he's like, hey, what happened? I thought you were coming to the tryout. I was like, yeah, you know, I've got some other coaches looking at me. I didn't really have anything. So he's like, oh, well, listen, I want to offer you a full scholarship to come pitch for us. And I was like, oh, all right. Yeah. Well, let me figure out what I'm going to do, and I'll see which school I'm going to go to or whatever. And, you know, so I'm like, all right, cool. And I hung up on him. And, you know, I remember, I think it was my mom, and I'm like, yeah, I think I just got a full scholarship to Seminole Community College. And she said, you better get on the phone and call him back and tell him you're coming. So, So I got on the phone and told them, all right, yeah, I made a decision. I'm coming to Seminole. And so I had two good years there. We went to the Junior College World Series, had a bunch of great players on that team that went on. Four of us went to Auburn. I got a scholarship to Auburn. Played there, was terrible my junior year. And then my senior year, I just went lights out. Something switched in my brain, and I was like, this is it. This could be my last season ever playing. And, I just said, I'm just going to go out there and go balls out, balls to the wall, and whatever happens, happens. And that little one shift in my brain really made the difference, because I was the same pitcher. You know, nothing really changed physically. But so I
wasn't,
went off.
It wasn't coaching. It wasn't, you learned a new pitch. It wasn't velocity. It was just.
Yeah, I mean, I gained 1 mile an hour in velocity. So,
right. At that level, that's nothing. Right.
I learned a sinker in my junior year, but I was terrible my junior year. I couldn't throw it for a strike. But my senior year, I was able to command it. But I think the command came from the mental shift, you know, where I was just like, I had the conviction behind it, where like if the catcher called a fastball inside, normally I'd be like, oh, I hope I don't hit this guy. I hope I don't throw a ball. I don't, you know, whatever.
And you were thinking that stuff on the mound?
My junior year. Yeah. My senior year, I made the shift and I was like, you know, he calls a fastball inside. I'm like, here it comes, sucker, hit it if you can, you know? So that was a different in mentality. And I think because of that, I executed more and had a lot more success. I was an All-American. I led the nation in ERA, led the nation in appearances.
That's crazy.
You know, I just was lights out my senior year.
You're American, but you did that All-American, but you did that at the SEC level. I mean, that's huge, man. That's great. Like, and I'm not gonna lie, I had no idea. Like, this is a different era, right? Like, if it was today, if this happened today and you were 2 years behind me in school and I graduated, like, I would be able to know that. But this is kind of like, we were still really pre-social media era for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really pre-internet. And then you were probably doing that, what, 03, 04?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Yep. I got drafted in 05. Yeah. So,
okay. And so I was sitting there in Iraq, just, you know, sitting 3 hour phone lines to call home. Right. So I had no idea what John Madden was doing there.
And Facebook
Auburn.
Was
awesome.
Literally.
Yeah. Facebook, MySpace.
Yeah, it was MySpace. And Facebook, you couldn't even get at the time. You couldn't even get on Facebook unless you were a college student at the time.
That's right. It was made for college students. That is correct. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
It wasn't like maybe a year or two after that when it kind of, you know, things started kind of where social media was big and all that.
So you bring up a really good point. And it's not to hype myself up, not at all, because I was nowhere near the level of player or pitcher you ended up becoming. But what you said really sticks with me, because I have this mentality and I always have, no matter what. And at sometimes I just don't have the talent to back it up, right? Baseball, what you described, like, I never did not feel what you described that kind of went on for you. Like, I was always on the mound. I was a much better pitcher, like, growing up than I was in high school. And then when I got to college, I was decent, but I never really got into games because it just didn't work out. But I never felt like I wasn't able to do what you just described. I just didn't have the talent to back my, like, internal ego up, right?
Right.
And I've told this to every sucker, you know, I still do stuff with the Army, but I've told this to every soldier I've ever had that has gone to a school or gone to any type of military school, anything. Walk in there knowing and believing you are the best one there. You may not be.
Right.
But if you believe you are, they're going to have to prove that they're better than you.
Yeah.
And I think that's an amazing thing that you brought up, because I feel like we look at baseball players, specifically pitchers more than anything, and just think, oh, these dudes are just locked in 100%. Like, there's no self-doubt. It's just full on, like, confidence, cocky, whatever. And it's like, I don't think what people realize is that internal communication that you have within yourself between pitch to pitch, right? Like, you're legit thinking what you described. Like, you're literally describing, you have all the arm talent in the world and you're like, oh man, what if I hit this dude? Yep. What if I throw a ball?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that, and I don't think people understand that. Everyone just kind of sees what they see on a screen and just, they don't ever, there's no conceptualization of what that dude is actually going through in that moment.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's such a big part of the game. In fact, that's why we flew up to DC, was to go talk to this guy, Brandon Guyer, played like 7 years in the big leagues. was stud. But yeah, he, his thing now, his business now is all about the mental side of the game. And I just know it's such a huge part of it, that, you know, we linked up and really trying to get the word out about what he's doing. And he's actually got a class going on, starts, what's today? Saturday, starts tomorrow. It's a 6-week online training, where he teaches all the stuff, all that mental training stuff for baseball specifically.
Yeah.
But it's good for anything. It's good for life, you know?
No, it is.
Yeah.
100%. Like, and that's why I transitioned to kind of the military side, because, and this is what I love about baseball. And I've explained this to people over the years, and more I feel like I'm either a better advocate of it, or they see it more now that I've said it so long. It's just like, when you look at team sports, I think baseball is the only team sport that's an individual sport within it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now you can look at football and be like, okay, well, linemen got to do that. Linemen got to win their, okay, got that. Basketball, no. Hockey, hockey's a different thing altogether. When it comes to baseball, it's an individual. Every time there's an individual moment going on, whether it's the yep. pitcher, the batter, if the batter hits the ball, it's whatever takes place after that. Like, it's all individual moments that are on a team. Yep. And I think that's why it's the coolest sport, because you can't hide, especially like you described. Once you get to college, dude, especially, you can't hide. And if you're the pitcher, you really can't. Like, it's literally dictated by what you do up on that mound and what happens behind you and with the batters at the plate. And that's, as I've gotten older and kind of away from it, and I told you like what I'm doing now, it's not the same. It's cool to still do it, but man, like, baseball is just the coolest game I think ever made. Yeah. Because it's the one game where you talked about, like, some of the dudes that were on your senior league team. It doesn't matter what your background is or if you can speak it. Can you play? That's it. And if you can, we're going to find out. You can't hide. You can't just, like, get yourself moved up and go on to the next level without being able to play. Like, at some point, you got to be able to play.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it definitely is, man. It is. And it's such a – you know, I coach my son now. He's yeah. 7 years old, and you know, I'm trying to teach him all of this about the game, the mental side, and this side, like, hey, and you know, it's, you got to play your role, you got to play your part. Yeah,
yep.
You might not be playing on the pitcher's mound this game, you know, but hey, if you're in center field, you got to put in your part, because guess what, that ball's going to come to you at some point.
It'll find you. Yeah,
it'll find you. It's like the Adam Sandler. You remember the Adam Sandler skit? When he's like, I don't know, it's the right fielder or something, and he's like, don't hit it to me, don't hit it to me. Oh, and it gets the ball.
It's going to find you. That's the coolest thing, man. I want to back up, though, because I am curious, because this, like I said, this affected a lot of us, man, and I don't know if it really affected – I don't know if it influenced Pate, but, I mean, we were just talking about how he's, you know, making his WWE debut now. But I know he did some time in the Air Force. I remember seeing him probably after I came back from Iraq. I don't know if 9/11 influenced that or if it was just something he wanted to do, but – I know 9/11 influenced a ton of us from Poinciana. And I was just curious, since you graduated 01, you know, well, probably May. So what, 5 months, 4 months later, 9/11 happened. But you would, where were you? What was that like for you?
Yeah, I remember I was in community college at Seminole.
Yeah.
And we were in, it would have been the fall. And I was in class. It was in the morning.
Yeah.
And I remember coming out of my first class, and everybody was like, oh my God, you know, it was going down. And they rolled the TVs out of the classroom and were showing what happened. And then we saw the second plane hit. And then I think they canceled school shortly after that. Yeah, it was crazy. It was surreal. You know, and Pate was in the Air Force at the time, and, you know, thinking about,
he had already joined.
Yeah, so
he joined after high school. Okay.
Yeah, he joined after high school. Yep. So okay. he was already in there. You know, and then thinking about I think he was. Yeah, I think he went right after high school.
Yeah. So I knew, like, when I ran into him, I think he had just came back from Iraq, and I knew where he was, because he was kind of doing like the Asalia mission that was over, or not, no, Ali Asalim, which was kind of like the theater gateway to go from Kuwait to Iraq. So I know what he was doing, which was pretty cool. But
Yeah. Man, freaking heat. So my son and I went to Japan in January to go watch him because it was his last show and it was awesome. He won the belt and he had been champion for a while there, you know, on and off or whatever. He's like a superstar over there in Japan.
And Tabita, right? Isn't Tabita the same way?
Yeah, Tabita.
Oh, shirt's off.
I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you remember. You might not have known him, but they had a younger brother too, Tala. He was real tall. He's over there too.
Yeah, vaguely. Okay. Yeah, everyone went to Japan. That's cool.
And who, Tinga Tonga.
Yeah.
Is
that him?
That's The Rock.
Oh, that's The Rock's all right. He's not quite them. He's okay.
So we got to see him, and then because we knew he told us, you know, we knew that was going to be probably his last show, and I've wanted to go over there for years and see him.
Yeah. This is him.
There he is. Yep, that's I remember that. I do remember that. That's pretty cool.
So it was cool to see him, and then he was here, and we knew he was going to WWE. We didn't know when or what was happening. And then his wife texted us and was like, hey, turn on Fox at, 8 o'clock SmackDown.
That's cool.
And we turned on. And, man, they've been pushing them good, too, these last couple weeks, man.
Yeah, I keep seeing the stuff. Like I said, I keep seeing it pop. Like, I have no idea when that stuff comes on. I keep seeing it come across on Facebook, though, and everything getting shared. So, yeah, that's cool. It's like I was telling you, your class, man, is just pushed out the most pros in sports.
I don't know what happened.
Where's Tabita? Is he still doing it?
He's in Japan. Yeah, he's
okay. Doing I haven't seen anything pop up from him recently on there. I know his wrestling because they were tag team at some point, right?
Yeah. So he hurt his knee. He had to have surgery, so he was out for a little while. But he's back doing good now, I can't say too much, but I think some good things are coming with him too.
I would imagine that's good. Well, it's well deserved. That's cool.
Yeah.
So then, okay. So 9/11 happens. You go back to school. You start your freshman year really at baseball. And then you wind up at Auburn. You talked about how like you thought you were going to get drafted out of high school. That didn't happen. So now senior year wraps up. You know, you're all SEC. You're all American. Are you expecting to be drafted? Had you already kind of had some communication? You knew or what?
Yeah. So every year I thought I was getting drafted, you know, after my junior year, high school, senior year, nothing. Seminole, I did really well at Seminole too. So those first 2 years, I was like, I'm getting drafted, nothing. And then my junior year, I was pretty terrible, but I had the Padres scout come to me and he was like, man, I really wanted to draft you, but you threw too many balls. You walked too many people. And I was like, all right. So that was like my first feedback from an actual scout.
Yeah.
It was like, I like what you're doing. I wanted to draft you, but you suck pretty much.
So, you know, everything that you're doing, just don't do something different.
Just be better.
Yeah, so be better, right?
So
if you
then,
can just find a way to be a better player, that would be cool.
So in my senior year, you know, I start dominating, and I talked to every scout. Like, I had face-to-face conversations with every scout. You know, my coaches said, you need to go get an agent. So I got an agent, which it's actually technically an advisor because you can't have an agent. Yeah. Well, back then, you couldn't have an agent beforehand.
Yeah, you missed the whole NIL deal, bro. You missed the whole NIL.
Oh,
you
man.
You're killing it. JPC bro. Everything.
Oh, my God. I would have been scheming. So I knew my senior year, I knew I was getting drafted, and they had me slotted 5th to 7th round. That's when my agent said, you're probably going to go 5th to 7th round. And that was nerve-wracking too, because I got drafted in the 8th round. So 5th round comes around, I'm like, here we go, you know, nothing. 6th round comes around, nothing. 7th round, I'm like, yo, what the hell? So I'm freaking out. And then 8th round, I got drafted. I just pulled into my driveway. I was driving home from Auburn to Florida. I pulled in the driveway, walk in the house. Matt Chesler's in there. My mom and my dad, they got the draft going on the radio or whatever, the computer. And then they call my name like probably 5 minutes after I walked in.
That's pretty cool. That's a good timing award right there.
That's cool.
So, What was the next step from there?
Go get drunk.
That's what I figured. Hell yeah, turn up.
I made it. Yeah. Where's that Jim Beam at?
Yeah, there was that Jim Beam at. That's where it started. Yeah. That's where he found Jim Beam, was right there.
Yeah. Well, you know who got me on Jim Beam actually was Troy Bell. You remember Troy Bell?
Taco Bell. Hell yeah, I remember Troy Bell. Yeah.
So he got me on the Jim Beam and probably, I don't know, maybe 10th or 11th grade. I don't know. Whenever.
Sounds about right for Point Siena High School.
Yeah. And it just kind of stuck. It just kind of stayed with me. And him too. He still drinks a Jim Beam. He's a Jim Beam.
That's my man. We gotta catch up with Troy next. I'm trying to catch up with everybody from the crew, man. Yeah. Like I've done so much with this podcast. I just want to do more like stuff that's I want to do different things this year, basically. That's my plan. So trying to touch base with guys like yourself and all. Troy would be cool to talk to, I think, too. Is he a coach or something? Or was he coach?
He's a assistant principal now.
Oh, okay. Damn.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. So he's down in Fort Myers. That's doing right. Good. He's got three kids now. Yeah, he's doing good. They might be moving to Ohio soon, though.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. But yeah, doing good. I keep up with him, Tavita Bate, obviously, Gus, which
Chavo.
Yeah.
I told you I ran into him randomly when we were doing like sports stuff. Like, so it was probably 2012 when I was doing like some silly little online sports talk show. And I had made connections with the local ESPN radio dudes at the time. And this guy, I don't know if you remember Jerry O'Neill, he's retired now from Central Florida Radio, but he was the voice of UCF forever. He was on ESPN at the time. And I was like, hey, I'm doing this. Is there any way like I could get access to like an Orlando Magic game or something? He's like, oh yeah, I'll just throw you on the media list.
Oh,
and
I'm nice.
Nobody, dude. And he got me like, this is right when the new arena had opened. And every night that I would request like the media pass to go to the Magic games, they'd like, yeah, they put me on the list. And one of them, I was sitting there and Gus was there and we ran into each other in like the media dining area. And I was like, oh shit, Gus, fuck, that was cool. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah, good old Gustavo, Gus Fernandez. He took my position at third, man, fucker. I had to move to first base my senior year.
He's always been doing something with sports, it seems like.
Yeah.
After high school and college, and he played a little bit in college too.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
But he was in between us, I think. I think he was 2000, right?
He was a junior. So yeah, he was a year behind. But no, I remember. I'm trying to remember what school he went. I know he went. I can't remember which school he went with. So I thought he went to play where Wilson and if you remember Wilson from.
Yeah, Delgado.
OHS, yeah. And then I think Marvin went and played there. Webster?
Was it? Yeah, I was going to say Weber.
Yeah, Weber. Yeah, Weber. Okay, the other college there. And yeah, that was a pretty cool spot for the locals to go play at.
Yeah, yeah. The local boys are still going over there. Like, it seems like some of these guys that have graduated recently are playing over there.
No, that's great, man. I think, like, especially the further you get away from it, and the more you go back and look at like Central Florida area is pretty, there's a lot of opportunity if you want to put it that way in terms of playing baseball still. Or you can be an idiot like me and go as far north as you can. And hey, wherever they give you those dollars, go for it.
Yes, sir.
And then what was that like, man? You get drunk and then you sober up and you realize you got to get on a, where'd you go next? What was it? Rookie ball? Was it low A, high A? What was it? Where'd they put you first?
Yeah, so you go to what they call it mini camp, which is all the guys that got drafted. You go to the spring training facility, which for me was in Peoria, Arizona.
Nice.
That's where the Padres were. And so we did mini camp, which was like a week, if I remember correctly. You go there for a week. Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't make it, bro. No offense, but I would have hated to see Giants hit bombs off you. I'm just saying.
Well, so anyway, so that – maybe not that year after minicamp, but Bochy was the
Bruce Bochy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was the manager of the Padres my first year.
Yeah.
So I got to meet him, and because we had the in spring training, you would the minor league guys would go over there and eat up some innings for the big guys. But especially in the beginning when their arms weren't ready, they would always just throw a bunch of us over there just to eat up innings. And you can tell the minor league guys who they are when they go over to spring training, because they got like stupid numbers like 97, 98, 62. Like, he was wearing 62, bro.
Hey, that's Brody Webb's number right now for the Giants. Just saying, he's 62. There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I got to meet him over there on the big league side. He was really cool, man. But that guy has got a huge head, man.
Yeah.
Big old head, that guy.
He's also got 4 rings, so, you know, that might
help. He knows what he's doing. He got a lot of brain power in that thing. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Giants seem to always get old Padres managers. Now they got Bob Melvin, so we'll see if the same thing happens. But so you're in Peoria, so now, like, I understand that. You are far away from Poinciana, Florida, my friend. How was that?
Yeah, cool. Went to mini camp, hit it off with the pitching the pitching coach and the pitching rover. They kind of liked, I guess, my style a little bit. And, you know, I was, you know, I talked a little crap and they liked it. Pro ball is totally different than college. Like, you know, I remember getting up. So after mini camp, I went to Eugene, Oregon for a short season A ball. And I remember getting off the plane and going over to the pitching coach. Me like, hey, coach, can I run over here real quick to get some? And he looks at me and goes, who the fuck are you calling coach? I'm like so confused. And he goes, my name is Wally. I go, oh. So that's when I learned that you just call the coaches by their first name in pro ball. But most of them don't even go by their first name. Most of them have a nickname. Like my manager that first season was Target. His name was Target. We're like, why do they call you Target? And then the other coach goes, because he always gets hit during BP. And sure enough, bro, that guy got smoked so many times that season with balls.
That's funny, dude. That's yeah, bro. Yeah, I imagine Eugene, Oregon must have been a bit of a culture shock for you, because I've been there.
Yeah, it was different.
Yeah? Different. I don't know how bad it was back then, but, I mean, now it's like needles everywhere on the streets type of thing.
There was a lot of bums there when we were there. But yeah, I'm sure it's even worse now.
Oh, okay. It's a big transition point, man, from all the weed farms down the Bay Area. So it's just like, yeah, it sucks because it's so beautiful. But once you unfortunately walk the streets, it sucks.
It wasn't
all great. Pacific Northwest is like that, man.
Yeah. We went to last summer. We flew into Seattle and then we went down to, Portland and then to Corvallis. And then we did the whole Oregon coast all the way down to North California to see the redwoods and stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's cool. Did you get the Jefferson National Park?
Or no, where did we go? Shoot, I can't remember the name. It was like really north.
Okay. So we did like the coastal redwoods. If you ever get a chance, go inland to like Sequoia National Park, where you see the because there's different types, right? There's the coastal redwoods, and then there's the sequoias. The coastals are the ones that are they're thick, but not like the sequoias, and they're really tall. Whereas the sequoias are just like, dude, they're just massive. Like, I got a picture of my family and I standing in front of them, and it's like us standing here, and then 15 feet out on each direction is the trunk of that fucking tree. Like, they're so big, man. But the coastal redwoods are cool because they're like 300 feet tall, man. That's just
they were, you know,
like, we don't see that in Florida growing up. We got palm trees, right? We don't see that.
We don't see that.
That's cool, man. So how did it go, like, with your rookie ball? How did that go?
Good, man. I did well in short season A, did really well in low A, which was the next year, which was Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then I spent 2 years in California, Lake Elsinore, California, and did okay there. I got bumped up to triple A at the end of my second year.
That's a quick rise, man.
Yeah.
So you were feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I was feeling good. Everything was good. And then I was only up in AAA for like a week at the end of the season. And then after that season, that's when I got Rule 5 to the Mets. So that was
okay. And you say you don't know what the hell that means. I still really don't. All I know is if you get called up as a Rule 5 player to the big league team, you have to stay on that team for the whole season.
Yes.
Like they can't option you back.
So similar. So I was in the AAA phase. Because I ended in AAA.
Okay.
I was in the AAA phase of the Rule 5 is what they said. So same thing goes. So the way I understand it is the team, so the Mets in this example, buys my contract from the Padres at, let's say, $50,000. And then they have spring training to basically try me out. And they can either release me and lose the $50,000 after that, or sell me back to the Padres at $25,000 half price. So,
hey, good deal. All right.
Yeah. So, but then you have to be rostered. If they keep you, you have to stay rostered for the season. So I guess I impressed them enough. They kept me, and I went and I was on their team in Binghamton, New York. And I pitched there
you were close. So you've seen upstate New York. You know where I was at this point.
Yeah.
SUNY Binghamton. They were the D1 school that used to wreck us.
Yeah. So we were breaking camp. So when I was breaking spring training with the Mets, we were watching on the TV news. There was like a mass shooting. And we're looking at, where is that mass? It was in Binghamton.
Oh, shit.
We had to leave like 2 days later, and we moved up there. And I'm like, oh man, this place is rough, man. It was a rough spot, man. Yeah. Binghamton was not, wasn't a nice place. So I played there half the season, then got hurt, and then had surgery, tried to rehab. That was it. That was ball game.
What was it though, man? Like, so you got hurt. I know I read on the website, like your velocity completely went away. What was the issue? Was it shoulder or what? What was the deal?
Yeah. So it was my shoulder. I didn't know what it was at the time. I tried to pitch through it, but it was ended up being a torn labrum and a torn rotator cuff. So they went in, did the surgery, fixed the labrum, decided not to do the rotator cuff. And then I tried to rehab it. And never the same after that.
That's what's weird though, because so I only did the 2 years in college before I dropped out, went to the Army, right? But I had the same sort of evaluation, because when I got up there, like, I don't know if you remember, I know Troy remembers because he jumped off the bench to come in and take my spot when I was walking off the mound or walking off the field with my arm dangling. When I broke my arm, right? You know, spent most of senior year kind of rehabbing it to get back to be able to throw. But then when I got to New York and I was playing, you know, I was redshirted my freshman year, got on a great throwing, like the pitching program was great. Like I added probably 4 to 5 miles per hour velocity. Like I was throwing pretty good, not, you know, all American John at Auburn good, but I was throwing pretty hard. And I remember going in there and be like, I had like this, despite all of that, like my shoulder always hurt. It hurts right now. Like it still hurts, dude. Like it always hurts, always. And it's the same thing of what you said though. Like they would do their little evaluations, be like, yeah, well, your rotator cuff it's partially torn. We don't recommend doing a surgery. And I've had that evaluation for 23 fucking years. And I don't want it. Like I don't want the surgery. I'm not looking for it. I would just, it would be nice for someone to finally be like, yeah, if you just get a surgery on your rotator cuff, everything will be great. But no one can ever see that. So I was just curious. They told you the same thing, basically. Like, we don't recommend repairing your rotator cuff. And why is that? Like,
well, they didn't even give me the chance. They didn't even give me the option. So I didn't know the rotator cuff was torn until they went in to fix my labrum. So they went in to fix my labrum and then saw that my rotator cuff was torn. And then the doctor made a decision while he was in there not to fix the rotator cuff.
So I don't say this to make you feel bad, but I say it because like we see now, and I'm curious what your take is on this. Like we see dudes who are so young now getting arm surgeries, right? I mean, Logan Webb, he's a perfect example. Like I saw this dude pitch as a senior in high school in Rockland when I first went out to go recruit out there. But yeah, he had a, I think he had Tommy John when he was 21, like his second year in the minor. You looking for your son? Is he all right out there?
Yeah, he's running after some car outside.
Okay, that's good. Cool. Hopefully he doesn't catch it. but you see dudes have these surgeries now younger and younger, and they bounce back just as strong, if not stronger. So what was kind of your, what year did this happen? Is my,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I think you're frozen, but I can hear you, type of thing. Uh-oh. Did we lose John? There he is.
I lost you for a second. Sorry.
No, you're back. So what year was this?
When I had surgery?
Yeah. It
was 2008 or 2009. Yeah, I think so 2008.
I really wonder because I give you the Logan Webb example. I can give you so many other examples of young pitchers who throw so hard that come back just as strong, if not stronger. What were you told? Were you told, hey, get this and you'll be able to come back? Or did you just not have a good recovery? Like, what was kind of your mentality when that happened?
So for the labrum, at first they didn't want to even do the surgery on the labrum. We tried to rehab it first.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't, I was like, nah, this ain't working. I need to go in there and get something fixed up. This ain't right.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I decided to go ahead and do the labrum surgery. And then what he told me about the rotator cuff was, like you said, it wasn't a big tear. It was a small tear. So his thought was, you know, fixing that would just cause too much scar tissue or too much. It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth fixing it. That would be better to just try to rehab and let it heal over. So, you know, I don't know. He was a big time Mets doctor. I just said, yeah, okay, sounds good. And I just started my rehab, you know? So I don't know if the technology wasn't back there back then or I mean, I busted my butt in rehab, so it wasn't like a lack of effort in rehab. I actually went to two different rehab sessions. You know, like I rehabbed twice as long as you're normally supposed to rehab for that.
You just didn't come back, or what was?
Never came back. Never felt the same. I was throwing like 76 miles an hour,
which is like me right now. Good job, bro. Yeah, bro. Dude, you want to come play for us? We're in the 40 leagues. You start next Saturday, bro. We could probably use you,
bro. I don't even know if I can get that now. I might be like 65 miles an hour.
Man, that is but when you were told, hey, get this surgery, everything was going to come back, or were you just kind of, you had no idea?
You know, they didn't say, they didn't make it seem like I was going to be fine. You know, they definitely gave me they didn't want me to do the surgery, like I said before. So it was like, it was definitely a risk, you know, Like,
yeah,
you know, I knew that going in, but it wasn't getting better not doing the surgery. So I was like, well, I got to do the surgery. You know,
what you do, just take 5 years off and not throw and
hope. Right.
But that's not realistic either. So.
Yeah. So, and you know, I was getting older too. You know, I was in there for, you know, I played, let's see, short season, low A, high A for 2 years. That would be my fifth season, you know.
You were what, 26, 27 around that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you should already be here, right?
Hopefully. Actually, I would have been older than that because I would have been done to college in, what, 23 plus 5 years, so like 28, you know?
So they're looking like, hey, bro, we need you now, type of thing. We don't got
time. Right, yeah. No. If I'm going to do something, you know.
It needs to be, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy, though, right? Like, man, because you were like, you were right there at that cusp of, you were almost there, and you probably got to, you got a lot of cool fucking memories with more than anything. Right. You got farther than most people ever will, which is pretty cool. And, you know, hopefully your son goes further. But either way, that's awesome, dude. Like, and like I said, for what most people don't realize is people don't realize how hard it is just to get to play varsity in high school. Like, most people don't even do that. Right. You're lucky if you get past Little League. And then if you can take it to the college level and go to what you did and then, you know, ultimately take it further into minor league baseball, like, dude, that's incredible. And that's what I love about baseball as well, because it's not every other sport. Like, you have to earn every level. There's no going from college to pro. Like, you have to earn it every step of the way. And man, you were right fucking there to be just that. That's really cool, man. I'm fucking proud of you. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks. It was a cool journey, man. It was It was fun. And then, you know, after that, I was just like, well, now what? Now what do I do? You know, do I go drive a truck again?
Yeah, you're driving a truck. Yeah, where's Big John? How did he take it all?
I actually did. I went and got my Class A, and I drove over the road for like 6 months. I was 11 days out, 3 days home. Yeah.
6 months.
And then I was like, yeah, 6 months. And then I was like, man, what the hell am I doing? So I quit after that. And then that's when I actually had started my baseball business before that when I was still playing. Yeah. But I decided after 6 months of truck driving, I was like, man, I got to do this business because I ain't driving a truck for the rest of my life.
It's not.
And
you,
thank
bro.
God I did, because now, man, it's been the best thing for me. And,
well, that's good. So tell me, that's a good transition. Tell me about this business.
Yeah. So back around the time, and we were talking about this earlier about the social media and stuff. It was about 2008. I got a BlackBerry, and you remember the BlackBerry had the roller on the side, and
I do.
And
yeah.
I was like, yo, you could check your email on the phone. I was like, mind blown. Yeah. And so I was like, man, I know, like, you know, I kind of saw where the internet was going and the technology was going with the phones and stuff. And I said, I got to jump on this, man. And so I started a baseball business where I just shared information and videos on baseball and what my experience and what I was doing. And it blew up. And I started selling a pitching program. And I remember I was at Troy Bell's house.
Nice.
Hanging out. And, you know, we were hanging out all day and partying. And I go to sleep. And the next morning I wake up and I had sold 4 pitching programs. And I was like, I just sold 4 pitching programs.
I made it.
And I was sleeping. And I was just like, yes. And then from that second on, I just doubled down on the business. And I've been growing it since I started it in like 2007, 2008, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's been a long time. And there was some years I was grinding on it. But now it's doing well. I sell a lot of baseball training equipment to parents of young players, coaches of all levels. I sell stuff to big league teams.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Which is great because it's a good transition into some of these questions I wanted to ask you from some folks who are curious, if I can find them, because I'm very well prepared here. When did you... while I effort this here, you talked about selling your program. What's the actual name of the program that you're talking about? Like, what's the website and
where? Yeah, pitching 365.
So not the You Go Pro anymore.
You Go Pro is the name of the business.
Okay.
Pitching 365 is just the pitching program.
Okay.
And that's on baseballtrainingprograms.com, or you can get to it through yougoprobaseball.com. But yeah, all the training equipment that I sell is on You Go Pro Baseball. And that's what the business is, You Go Pro Baseball.
Okay. Got it. So there it is. All right. So I got two real important questions. These ones are the ones that kind of popped up the most. And I think it's funny because when I saw it, I was like, that's a great question. Cause I would love to ask him. Cause I know for sure your dad was very, very good shape. He lifted, worked out, ate really well. My dad was the exact same thing, but I don't know if it was the same for you, but I didn't really listen to my dad, unfortunately, until it was too late, right? Like now I listen to him all the time. Like whatever he does and tells me to do, I do it. But so that's kind of centers around the first question is like, so this person has a high school player, what nutrition and recovery / warm-up exercises would you recommend for high school pitchers?
Yeah. Obviously nutrition.
We were winging it those days.
100%. We didn't have the internet to like look up stuff. We did, but it wasn't like it is today.
What I do remember from you though, I remember you had that like sleeve, that ice sleeve that you would always have. I do remember you having that. So
yeah. And you know, what's funny. I went through phases with icing over the years. Like I would ice a little while and then sometimes I wouldn't ice and sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't. And I ended my career on the belief that not icing is the best.
That's what I've just recently read. Like there's this whole new method about that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So more of like massaging. So what I felt best was like we called it milk in the arm. So after I pitched for recovery wise, I like put my arm up, and then the trainers or whoever, or I go get a massage or something, they try to get all this blood back down out of the arm, out of the shoulder, out of the elbow, okay. And then getting new blood in there. A lot of people are flossing now, where they take they go through exercises with the bands. I sell those on my website.
Hey, what's up? There you go.
You know, that's great. The bands are great, you know, great routine for warming up or even recovery afterwards. But man, it's really just about listening to your body. You know, growing up, my dad taught me was rice, rest.
Yeah, ice. We were the same. Like, my mom was a nurse, same thing, but apparently that's not the thing anymore, right?
Right. So rest, ice, compression, and elevate, I think it was.
Yeah, elevation.
So then I kind of changed that over the years. For me, I think of the six R's, and I'm probably going to forget an R right now, but rest, run. I think running after pitching is really good. Kind of for me, I don't know what it does, but I always felt my arm like burning afterwards. I just felt like new blood was getting in there.
By running?
Rub is another one. Like I said, rubbing the yeah. arm out. Wrap. I know that's spelled with a W, but you know, it sounds like an R.
Boise out of high school, bro. I understand. No worries.
And what is that? That's four. So there's two more, and I don't remember what they are. It's
recover,
been a few years since I played.
Relax.
Yeah.
Raise.
Okay. Yep. but yeah, no, just and nutrition definitely is important too, for sure.
Did you guys have like a nutritionist while you were playing in the, like, I wouldn't say college because I get college is kind of is what it is, but what, like in pro ball, were your meals kind of supervised or recommended, or how'd that go?
So in pro ball, we had a spread before the game.
Okay.
We would have to eat breakfast and do dinner by ourselves, but we had meetings. They would have meetings and teach us about nutrition and stuff. Awesome. But the spreads weren't great either. Like,
right. So they're telling you something, but at the same time, like, right. giving you like this crap.
We call, what's up, Steel? How you doing, bud? my son's got a friend over. Nice. But yeah, we used to call the peanut butter and jellies, which they had on the spread, we used to call them minor league steaks.
Nice.
What are you eating over there? Just a little minor league steak.
A little minor league steak, yeah.
So, but no, it's definitely important. Hard to eat well in pro ball in the minor leagues because you're not making a lot. So, you know, good food costs a little bit of money, but definitely important if you got the means and the resources to do so. You know, definitely want to eat healthy and try to recover as quick as you can.
So for a high school student, so say you got your son there in high school, what would you try to have him focus on for diet?
I mean, a lot of protein during the season. Definitely trying to maintain the weight during the season.
Yeah.
You know, I think you know, when they're out there working hard and training a lot, they need to replenish all of that. I used to like to eat the day before I pitched chicken parmesan with the pasta, you know, get the carbs in there, get the good protein.
Love chicken parm, bro. That's my jam. Anywhere I go, to a new spot, every season, to a Italian spot, I gotta try the chicken parm and see how it is.
Hell yeah. And get a little carb load, you know, the day before. The night before.
Protein as well, yeah. That's good. Yeah. I was just curious, like, if you ever felt, did you respond with your arm after pitching? Did you ever notice or even attempt to experiment your diet in terms of recovery? Like if you went, I don't know, maybe you went high carb, high protein after pitching, or if you just went high protein, low carb, like, did you notice something that made the difference more than something else?
So I never like counted proteins and carbs and macro, like I never counted my macros or anything like that. Just more of a feel what I was doing, but I can 100% say that the fatter I got over the season, the better I felt. Like the more I ate, the better I felt. Like, because you recover better. Like the more, you know, there's a happy medium, because there were some times where I would do too much and get too fat to where I was like breathing heavy out there when I'm pitching, you know. But definitely the more I ate, the less sore I got, the quicker I recovered, and the faster I was able to throw by the end of the season. So I was just more durable. So I definitely found that. So I didn't, because there were seasons where I tried to maintain my weight, where like I would start the season at 220 and I try to, you know, end it at 220. And oh, it was always horrible. I was so more, looking back, I was more sore, longer, took longer to recover. But the seasons where I started at 220 and ended at 240 were great. You know, I was like,
did you ever think about starting at 240 and ending at 220 maybe?
That's hard to do, man. When you got the minor league stakes in front of you.
Well, that's the thing though, because I think it's funny that you bring that up, because I see this a lot with catchers, and obviously I pay more attention now to Patrick Bailey for the Giants, because he specifically said he was doing this for this reason, is like major league catchers lose a ton of weight throughout the season, right? I mean, you know, especially when summer hits. If you've ever caught, I'm sure you may have done it once or twice, but at least just playing in the summer, I mean, you imagine catching 2 or 3 days a week with a day off, maybe in between, doing it again in the summer with all that gear on. That takes a toll, and it takes a toll on your weight more than anything. And so it's kind of funny, because I feel bad, because I know every fan base are assholes, but Giants fans can be very funny on Twitter. So Patrick Bailey, the Giants catcher, it's his second year. He shows he was noticeably heavier this season. Let's put it that way. And he said he did it on purpose because he wanted to try and have a good frame to lose weight from as the season progressed. And look, we're a month in, and he's already lost the weight. But man, you had people calling him, his name's Patrick Bailey. You had people calling him Fatrick. Just like the dumbest shit, bro.
Well, I mean,
his face was so swollen. It's like all of his weight went right to his face, and now he's slimmed out again, so he looks normal.
Well, Panda had that issue too, didn't he? Like he had some.
It's Pablo Sandoval. Well, his issue might just be that he's just naturally like has a proclivity to be fat. So
But he played well when he was.
No, he was. Yeah, you're right. I'm just saying, like. That's why I was asking you, like, maybe if you started the season at 240 and drops instead of trying to put maybe. On.
Maybe.
Because I think where you're coming from is joint health, right? Like, if you have more body fat, your joints tend to be a little healthier than someone who's, you know, shredded, right? They don't have the body fat, and they don't have any of that lubrication internally. So that's why I thought, like, it was interesting, because I just remember your dad was jacked, my dad was jacked, and they'd be in the stands and just having bicep competitions. But yeah, no, I was curious, because I honestly never, it was always in one ear, out the other, until it was too late, right, with my dad, right? So now I listen to him, and, you know, you don't know this because you didn't see me, dude, when I went to Iraq, man, I think I left Fort Stewart in Georgia when we deployed, I was like 207. And when I came back on leave in October of 2003, after what, 8 months of being there, dude, I weighed 163.
Dang.
Dude, there's a picture of me with my cut, like they were little at the time, but my cousins, and I'm in like this wife beater on leave in my parents' driveway. Dude, I am just like shredded skinny, right? Like it's just hilarious. Yeah. And so when I finally came back, because we got a gym, I think a few weeks later, and we didn't have any of this shit over there at the time. We were just there. When I got a gym and started working out, I came back at like 175. And I'd never been stronger in my life than when I was 23 years old and 175 pounds, just shredded. Like even to this day, I can't bench or squat or deadlift anything that I could do when I was like 175 pound version of me. Right. Yeah. Like right now, I'm 203. I'll never be as strong as I was then. But
dang.
I just think it's funny because it's just like, that's when I started listening to my dad in terms of diet, right, and what you should eat, how you should actually work out. And before then, it was just like, oh yeah, I got, you know, Coach Harpel in the gym during PE. Go bench. Right. So now I was just curious how that was for the minor leagues, especially back then. Maybe it's different now, but did you guys have a good actual like between starts workout program, or was it kind of off season workouts, or were you guys really even monitored?
Yeah, so I was a relief pitcher, so it was weird. It was tough for me because I just had to be ready every time, you know, all the time. So, but yeah, the starters had a regimented program, what they had to do each and every day. And then my pitching 365, I break it down for starters and relievers as well. But, you know, typically they were on a 5-day rotation. And then they would have their you know, they would have a, some guys like to do one bullpen a week, or some would do two in between their starts. And then, you know, they would have different throwing days and workout days in between their five rest days.
Did you want to become a closer? Or was that something that just kind of evolved?
I enjoyed starting. Like, I started in community college.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. And when I went to Auburn, that's when they put me into a relief pitcher.
Why was that? Because you velocity or just or what?
I think because I sucked at my first year at Auburn. I think that's what it was. And, you know, pitching in the SEC, too, you know, you kind of have to have a few pitches, they say, you know, especially as a starter. And I had really one pitch. I threw a sinker. And my senior year, I literally dominated with the sinker. And the Padres scout told me two or 3 weeks before the draft, he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna draft you." He's like, "Can you throw another pitch so that I have something to like tell him?" Like, he throws two pitches. I was like, "Yeah, I can throw a slider." He's like, "Will you throw the slider these last 2 weeks?" So I started throwing the slider the last 2 weeks, and I started striking people out with the slider. So
that's wild, man. So like none of the college coaches ever tried to, like, your pitching coach never tried to teach you another pitch or ask you to do something different?
They couldn't hit my sinker. I literally was dominating that year with the sinker. Yeah,
why not?
I could throw it. I always threw a slider. My changeup was always terrible, so I never threw that. But I could throw a slider, but they literally hit my sinker that year.
That's weird. Because that's the only pitch I could throw in college was a changeup.
Yeah.
Still, circle changeup. Like, I do it out here now, man. It's fucking nasty. And I just learned a sinker, which is even funnier. Because there's no such thing as a fastball when you're my age with a broke down arm, right? Like, your fastball, like I said, it might be 76 if you're lucky. Probably not. But yeah, like, that's wild. I still can just throw the changeup and it drops down, and I learned a sinker, and it's like the same plane. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're doing it against other dudes, it's not college pitchers, so I don't really got to worry about shit. No one's going to take me yard. Let's put it that way.
I never really had that feel, man. I just, because everything I did was just balls to the wall, gripping and ripping and throw it as hard as I could. So changeup to me was just always a tough pitch.
Isn't that weird though? Now, like, when you look back in hindsight, because you adopted the mentality, right? But you didn't apply it to that pitch. And do you ever think, like, I don't even know if that would have changed your trajectory, because it sounds like what really derailed you was this surgery. Like, that's kind of what. And I don't know, man. Maybe it was the doctor. Who fucking knows? But that's why I was just curious, like, what you're, because you seem like you're pretty much at peace with how everything went. But
oh yeah.
I just think it sucks how so many people do surgeries at such a younger, much younger age, right? And they come back stronger and even better than they were. And well, now we got you throwing 76, man. I might be able to take you over the field now. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, a funny story, man. So, like, a couple years after I got after that happened and the surgery and everything, I go to truck drive and all that. I got a little depressed afterwards, you know, like, man, you know, that was my dream since being a kid.
You were right there.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, I was a little depressed, a little overweight there for a while. But then I started getting my shit together. And I started working out, got in really good shape. And then I'm still married. I don't know why I said at the time, but back then I was married to my wife now. And I sat her down on the couch. I said, "Baby, I think I'm gonna make another run at this. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna give it one more shot.
Let's go. Let's go."
Yeah. She looks at me and she starts crying.
Oh, come on, wife. What are we doing? What are we doing?
I go, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. I'm good.
Why? What happened?
So that was it. So I was like, yeah, that's it. And
did you meet her while you were playing pro ball, or where'd you meet her?
Yeah. I met her at home during the off season. So she was
in Florida.
She actually in Florida. Yeah, she ended up. She was my neighbor.
Oh shit! Found
her on Facebook though.
You found her on Facebook. That's
MySpace.
MySpace. Okay.
So you used to be able to search by zip code, remember? And you could do female and zip code, like 5 miles.
Yes.
So I did female, put my zip code 5 miles. And she was one of the ones that popped up. And, you know, so I hit her up. And then she ended up living straight across the street from me. So I'm like, yo, why don't you come out? We'll go for a walk. I'll grab some beers and we'll go for a walk. So she was like, all right. So, of course, I didn't want to tell her I played professional baseball, you know. So she's like, well, you know, what do you do? And I was like, I work at the hospital.
Drive trucks. Yeah,
you work at the hospital? I said, yeah, I help the doctors with the circumcisions. She said, what?
So do I. Said, yeah. What do you mean?
I said, yeah, the pay's not great, but I get a lot of tips.
Got her.
And she didn't get it. I was like, yeah, this girl's hot, but she's a little dumb.
This girl's hot, but she's a little dumb.
So then she goes back to her mom afterwards. And her mom's like, so how was he? And what does he do? And she's like, something with doctors and circumcisions. And her mom's like, ooh, the medical field, nice.
Yeah, I've had surgeries. That's my medical field experience.
So that's how we met.
Is she a little smarter now, or do you?
Yeah. Now she's smart enough to know that I'm full of shit. So she doesn't take anything serious.
That's perfect. Good deal. And you said she's 6 feet tall?
Yeah, she's 6 foot tall. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy. Your son is going to be a giant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, just keep him in baseball because it's the only sport where you don't really have to worry about him, like, you know, fucking his knees up or getting concussions.
True.
Because he can probably play basketball or football too, right? But I think you don't want that.
I signed him up for tackle football.
It'll be fun while he's bigger than everybody, but the only way to tackle somebody bigger than you is to go where?
That's right.
That's right. It's gotta go for those legs, man.
Bro, so he played flag football this spring. He's still playing. They're 13-0 right now. Got two more games to win the championship. But he loves it, man. So then I was asking him if he wants to play with those, you know, his friends from that team in tackle. He was like, yeah, let's do it. So we're going to give it a shot and see how it goes.
Man. Quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to have an arm, like, right? He should inherit the arm skill from you, we hope.
He does.
He does. Have the size.
He has the size and he has the arm. He sure does.
That's good, man. That's going to be fun to watch. I hope that goes well for him.
Yeah.
I got one last question for you, bro.
What you got?
All right. So this esteemed gentleman wants to know, what were the best training or tips that you got at the earliest age that helped you with your game? Let's not even go earliest, right? Because earliest, what would you say is the best thing that you could pass along to someone in terms of how to go about practice and training?
Man, I think, you know, my dad was jacked, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of great advice physically.
Yeah.
But he also had a lot of great mental advice. So I was talking to my wife about this the other day, and I don't know if it's the right way to go about it, but it's something that really helped me. And he said, think of the people that you're playing as your enemy and use that energy to kick their ass.
There you go.
And so I always would think in my head at a young age, when I was playing against someone that, like, is this the kid that hit my sister? And I would like psych myself up, like in my brain, I'd be like, oh, I want to kill this guy.
Yeah.
And I would just get like so mad, but I would use that energy to, you know, hit the ball or throw the ball or whatever it was. So I learned at a very young age how to psych myself up in certain situations. And I think that was huge. And, you know, somewhere along the way, I had it through high school because I remember just wanting to beat every team and just, you know, having no fear. But somewhere I lost it. And I had to get it back my senior year, like we talked about, and get that mental switch back.
No, it's true, because it aligns with, like, what did Michael Jordan used to do, right? He could just make shit up to motivate himself. Because, like, stuff that wasn't even true. But, no, I think it's a great point of what you're saying is because – and I still have this issue with – and this was one of the issues I had with my buddies out in California. We were playing on an all-gym, like, our softball team. It's like they knew some of the other team – and they'd be out there like having fun in the game. I'm just like, no, fuck these dudes. Why the fuck? We could talk to them after the game. Fuck them. I'm not trying to be friends with you. And I've always been that way. Always. Like I hate you on the field.
Yeah.
Like, I absolutely do. I want the worst for you. I hope my pitcher strikes you out. If he doesn't strike you out, I hope he hits you in the head. Like, I have those thoughts. Like, when I see a pitch going high and tight, I'm like, ooh, hit him. Like, I want you to be in pain if you do get hit and go to first base, and I don't want you to be able to play well the rest of the game because I just want to win. And I don't care how it happens. Like, I really don't. After the game, look, dude, I'm the nicest. I'll try and be a smart ass and be funny, but yeah, I'm with you, bro. Like, when we're playing, this is competition. This is your enemy. You are my fucking opponent, and I am going to do whatever I can to beat you. I'm not here to have fun unless I win. That's the only thing that's fun to me is winning. Losing sucks.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. 100%.
And like I said, I can go all the way back. Like, I've never had the talent to back up this mentality, but it's there. It's there. If you would have given me Jordan's talent, man, I'd have been an asshole, but I'd have been great. But I didn't have the talent. I just had Jordan's mentality.
bro, so true. It is so true, man. It's the biggest part of the game.
That's cool, man. So, all right, let's do some plugs, and I'll let you get out of here and go find your son before he runs into a car. all right, so you got – it's Hugo Pro Baseball, right?
Yep.
And then what's the program?
Pitching 365, but I also sell all kinds of baseball training equipment, batting cages, swing trainers, gloves, mini wiffle ball pitching machines. They're really cool. One of my guys who I've met along the years, his dad actually invented it when he was like 12 years old. It just shoots mini wiffle balls. I don't know if I have
it here. You got some with you? It looks like you're in the
I was just looking if I had it. But it shoots these mini like golf ball size wiffle balls, and it's a machine, pitching machine. But anyway, his dad invented it when he was like 12, and the kid used it in the garage, you know, growing up, whatever.
Yeah.
Makes it to the big leagues. First pitch he sees in the big leagues, home run.
What?
He's one of like 30 guys in MLB history to hit a home run on the first pitch he sees.
Who was that?
Chris Richard is his
name. Chris Richard. Yeah. Okay. All right. So there's that. There's Hugo Pro Baseball, the program you mentioned. One last question for you. Who was the best player you played with post-college? That went on, I would say.
Best player I played with post college, played with Josh Donaldson in college.
I know that guy. Yeah, third baseman for the Yankees, right?
Yeah, I didn't play with this guy, but we trained together in the offseason in pro ball. D. Gordon, phenomenal athlete. I mean, I got a funny story about him too. Because at the time, you know, he was in pro ball, just in pro ball. But he's a small guy. He looks like
he's a little slight. We'll put D. You're 6'4", bro. You're bigger than everybody. Like, that's
right. So you know, we're in there, and I'm like, man, this guy is athletic. You know, I'm looking at him like, this guy is athletic. Yeah. And I'm like, I said to the trainer, who is that? He's like, that's D. Gordon, man. He's gonna be, you know, he's gonna be in the MLB soon. He was in the minor leagues at the time, and he's like, he's the real deal. Watch. But this other kid came in and he thought that D was a high schooler, but you know, he's already in the minor leagues, and D was like, man, something came up. There's these cables where the batting cages were. It was like 12 and a half feet off the ground, and somehow D was like, I'll touch that. And the guy was like, the other guy was like, hell no, you ain't touching that. And he bet him $100. D took like two steps, boom, jumped up to that cable. I was like, oh my God. Damn. It was the craziest thing, man.
Yeah. Did he play for the Marlins?
He played for the Marlins.
Yeah. Yep. I do remember D Gordon. Yeah. Like that dude was, that dude had some moves, man.
Yeah. Now his little brother's playing, Nick Gordon playing.
Oh, really? Doing,
yep. He's in the big leagues. Yep.
That's cool, man. Yeah, that's because that's the other thing. Like I said, like if you grind it throughout up to like you were literally on the cusp, and you definitely had to have met some dudes along the way. So, and I heard some story. I heard like an interview with Josh Donaldson a couple of weeks ago on MLB Network on the radio. That dude's pretty funny. He's a character. Yeah,
he's funny, man. He was a freshman when I was in Auburn, and you know it was funny because I remember freshman Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was a super funny guy, you know. Yeah. And then you know, it's funny, but he's a cool guy, man. I talk to him every once in a while, like once in a blue moon, you know. I'll shoot him a message on Facebook or something. Cool. But it's been years since I talked to him.
That's cool, man. All right, man. Well, John Madden, you go pro baseball. What's the name of the pitching program?
Pitching 365.
And what is the what is the best pitch in baseball?
Sinker. You know it, and you know it.
It's a sinker, bro.
You got it.
Show us the grip real quick. Show us. Is it right? You got a ball? I left the ball out there.
I got a fake ball.
There you go. Perfect. Sinker right there. There it is. And just throw it like a fastball, like a four seamer, right? Just dives.
I was a little bit lower arm slot, so I would come right over top of it.
Oh, you rotate in?
Yeah, I pronate. Yep.
Really? Isn't that more like screwballish?
Yeah. Yep.
Damn. Yep. Okay.
Yep. And I just rip as hard as I could over top of it.
Noted. We'll try it next week. We start opening day, May 4th, man. Let's go. If you can get up I'll use you for an inning. Let's go.
Let's go. I'll play right field or something.
I'm sure we could use you, bro. All right, man. That's John Madden. Bro, I appreciate you joining and hanging out with me for an hour. Yeah, man. Get out to your son.
Good talking with you, bro.
And if you're back up here, like I said, let's get up to Orioles, see some Camden Yards. We'll see some Nats Park. Let me know when you're here, brother.
Hell yeah. I will do it.
All right, dude. All right, bro.